Hi, welcome to the Galvanize and Restore podcast. I'm your host, Jessica Concepcion, and I hope you are already having a wonderful, beautiful day wherever you're tuning in from. Today's episode, you are in for a ride. Kathy Wilson is talking in this part two of rehabilitation for sons and daughters who experience human trafficking in America. I hope you enjoy, and also please note this episode is for a more mature audience. Please reconsider listening another time if you do have young children around you. Thank you, and I hope you really do enjoy this week's episode. Please comment, review, and share this with a friend. Thank you and enjoy.
Please don't get your elementary school children's smartphones. They do not need that access to the internet, and they're playing with fire, and there are people constantly on Snapchat, Instagram, all of these sites that are fishing expeditions, that are looking for people, both children and adults, to victimize. And you know, we hear the stories and they're true. It's not sensationalized. We had one. I talked to parents, and their child ended up not coming to one of our programs. But just their experience, you know, in church every Sunday, and really involved parents, three little girls, you know, kids in drama and sports, and dad, you know, coaching the team, highly involved, private school. So in the past, a family like that, their child this would have never intruded on their world. The only thing, you know, would have been like a kidnapping, like the Elizabeth Smart story. But being trafficked and sold for sex and being victimized in these kinds of ways, you know, that was much more kids with a lot of risk factors, you know, parents using drugs, parents with a history in the life, broken homes, abuse, poverty, all those kinds of risk factors still cause a child to be at more risk of this happening to them. Mm-hmm. But now, with social media and our technology, the thing people really need to realize is anyone can come into your living room and your home at any time through our technology, through your child's phone. And so kids that never would have been at risk of these kinds of, you know, social ills now are. And so this little family had a knock on the door from the FBI and said, we need to sit down and talk with you and your 12-year-old daughter. Well, she's 13 now. And so they sat in the living room, and the parents are totally befuddled, you know, what is going on here? And so they said, tell us about your boyfriend, to the girl. And her mom's like, she's never had a boyfriend. You know, she's been very sheltered, and she's just started middle school. Well, it turns out she had a boyfriend, and it was an online relationship, and he's a freshman in high school. So lived in a beach community nearby town, and they'd never met. And so she met her boyfriend on her social media, on Snapchat, on Instagram. And so it's, you know, we know it's all about the numbers of followers you can get and the likes, all the hearts and, you know, emojis. And so that's what's driving it for kids and adults. There's so much comparison, there's so much insecurity. And so, you know, this relationship started off, he followed her. She didn't know who he was, but he was cute. And so, you know, liking her pictures, and then that proceeded to exchanging phone numbers privately. And then now they're texting each other. So nothing that anyone is seeing, you know, on the Instagram, he's still, you know, they're still commenting back and forth on each other's pictures and things, and posts. But now it's texting at night when she's in bed. Mm-hmm. And so and he's older than she is. So she doesn't want him to think she's some dumb little kid and break up with her. She thinks she's in love for the first time. So he asks her to send him pictures of her in her bathing suit and her underwear, and then to send nudes. And this is part of teen culture now, unfortunately, with their phones, is that sending nudes is part and parcel of, you know, what our teenagers are doing now in middle school and high school and beyond. And so that's really hard for parents to hear, how routine that is, how commonplace, but it is. And so again, having those conversations with your kids, trying to forestall and prevent and let them know they can come to you, you know, with things that are hard like that, because that's what they're dealing with. That is the sea they're swimming in. Yeah. So this had been going on for a while, that she's sending him all these naked pictures of herself. Oh, wow. And then they had made plans to meet up. So she was going to have a friend or someone drop her off or take the bus and meet up at the beach. And they were finally going to meet. And so the FBI in the living room says, well, here, we're going to show you a picture of your real boyfriend. And it was a guy in his 50s.
Wow.
And so now this little family was caught up in, you know, a huge child porn, you know, a bust that they're trying to do nationwide. So wow. Her pictures are out there. And, you know, they're never going to get those back. Her pictures are out there forever, being looked at, you know, by who knows who around the world. This is how it works now. And so, and had she gone through on the plan to meet up, then it would have progressed to a whole new level. Then she could have become one of the kids that we work with, you know, in our program, because she could have disappeared. She could have, you know, then at that point, who knows, you know, how the story is going to unfold, but it's not going to be good. And yeah,
it's really traumatizing, I think, for the parents, especially since you mentioned they went to, you know, they had like this really regular life. And then I think it depends on how they respond to the child too, whether or not the resilience will be there to not let this affect, you know, like the rest of her life.
Right.
Because that's one of the interesting things they say, if there's any, you know, child abuse, or is to kind of stay calm when a child openly shares like what's happening. Cause mm-hmm. that's not, you know, a parent's automatic reaction is what, you know, like, it's right. It's outrage and fear and sadness, and you know, so
this is your baby, yes,
and you know, for most parents, they're striving so hard to provide for their children, protect them, educate them, and support them and love them, and to have, you know, some loser 50 years old trying to exploit them is
terrifying. It's terrifying. It rocks your whole world. And, you know, it's can't believe this is even happening, but it is.
It's infuriating, I think. Like, it makes you so mad that, you know, it's like, for me at least, like, I feel like it's like, you don't have anything else better to do with your life. Like, this beautiful world that we live in, find something productive to do, you know? Anyways, before we go on a tangent, another one.
And I mean, that made me think of what you were saying, made me think of something, because some of our kids have been, you know, sold by their and victimized by their own family members, mm-hmm. Some by parents, some by other family members. So it happens that way too, you know? And so then in those cases, you know, we try to help come up with a safety plan, you know, what does it look like for reentry upon, you know, graduating one of our residential programs? And those kids may be with us for a much longer period of time. So we have one of those girls in our orbit that was trafficked by her mother. And so she's still, as a young adult, she's in college now, but we're still, you know, very actively involved in her life, where we continue to, you know, pay for therapy to help her with expenses for her schooling. And each one of the stories of our girls is completely different. So some of the kids may only be in one of our programs for a few months. The average mm-hmm. stay is 15 months. And then we have kids who've, you know, we've been actively involved in for going on 8 years, that type of thing. So it's some of them want to just put it completely behind them and move on with their lives. And some of them want to become advocates and, you know, help other kids who, you know, find themselves in similar situations. We always tell them, you know, to guard their stories, just to be so careful with oversharing, you know, especially if they go home, because they don't have cell phones. When they're in our residential programs, they do not have internet access or cell phone. Maybe they can progress to that, you know, at the time that they're getting ready to go home.
Is it for their safety or is it for like their healing?
Yeah, for both. Because their technology, their phones have been so much a part of what they've done and how they make contacts with people and, you know, friends that drag them down and back into the same situation. So they know that ahead of time coming into our programs that they're going to forego that. They have phone approved phone lists of safe people, family members, you know, advocates, their social worker, people like that, you know, who are safe to help them, you know, break away from what's been going on.
I know we even talked about this before we started recording, but could you explain some of the barriers when it comes to opening a shelter for children?
Well, you know, for good reason. I mean, we've heard, you know, stories of abuse and things that have happened in orphanages and, you know, places that have been closed down for, you know, for awful things that have happened to kids. And so, you know, for very good reason, we have a lot of regulations and safeguards now in our country of, you know, how do you get licensed? How do you do residential care for minors? You know, if you're a boarding school, if you're a therapeutic program, but, unfortunately, some of those regulations, the bar is set so high that it makes it just extraordinarily expensive to try to put something together for residential care for minors for long term, and especially in this field of, you know, caring for child trafficking providers. Often, the scenario that happens is there will be a group like us that really wants to fill this this niche need of long term care, you know, trauma-informed care to help these kids, you know, heal and move on. And then they just keep running into one barrier after another and one expense after another. And so then people tend to throw up their hands in despair and say, you know, I'm going to do something overseas instead, where it's, you can do a whole program for maybe what it would cost to care for one child here in the United States. Or switch and say, rather than doing something for kids residentially, we're going to do maybe just a drop-in center, you know, a day type of a program that doesn't have the residential component, or we'll do residential, but we'll do it for adults for 18 and up. And so it's fairly easy to open programs for adults, and they're really needed with... If a child is traumatized in this way, there's an kind of an arrested development thing that happens, you know, and so they're still getting older physically, but in many, many ways, typical growth and maturation processes are, you know, are short circuited, and because their trauma is so, so deep. And so, you may have someone who's 18, who's legally an adult, but they may have the emotional, you know, level of about a 13-year-old or 14-year-old. And so there's lifetime healing that happens. It's not like when you go into a residential program that after 24 months, you're all fixed. You know, you just as with people who've been experienced typical sexual abuse, not being trafficked per se, but they've known sexual abuse in their lives. You come back around and you process that, and sometimes it smacks you up the face in a real painful way. You know, years later, maybe you're getting married, you know, in your early 20s, or having your first child in your late 20s or 30s, and you have to process and think about your own trauma and experience at a different stage of your life. And so you know, and people might think, wow, I thought I worked through all that. Why is this so, you know, painful for me again now in a fresh kind of way? Mm-hmm. And someone told me something a long time ago that really hit home. And it's that rather than thinking of it as healing happening, like going in a straight line, like climbing up a mountain, you know, getting higher, higher, higher in your healing journey. Think of it more like you're traveling on a path around that mountain, going around. Yeah. Going higher, the road is taking you up the mountain, but it's circling around. And so sometimes you circle back around to this place and you're further along on your road up the mountain, but you're just encountering that pain and that trauma again. You know, you're circling back around to it.
I like that analogy.
Yeah, that made a lot of sense to me. And so that's, you know, that's how it is with these kinds of things. It's a lifelong healing journey. And, you know, we, you and I know and believe in the depths of our being that when God is part of that picture, you know, that's when your true healing happens for all of us. We were created for a relationship with God and to know Him. And, Jesus says He's the great physician, and he came not for the people who think they have it all together and don't need any help. He came to heal the sick. He came to heal people who know that they're broken and that, you know, they have need. And so we're an unapologetically faith-based organization, and we bring that component into it as well. We don't force God on kids that we work with or their families, but we share Him freely, and they're invited, you know, to come to church, invited, you know, to study the Bible, and they're not beat over the head with Bibles, but we're respectful. So, you know, we work with law enforcement. We have judges that can place kids in our programs that can come to us from probation. So we look for programs that are not little hokey, fly-by-night, doing whatever they want, forcing religion down people's throats. We look for you know, places to place our kids that are respectful, but that are also filled with the love of God and mm-hmm. that feel like a warm hug, you know, and a safe place for that child to land. Those are the kind of places that we vet out and seek to partner with. And then New Day can help with placement, can help with referrals. We help with transportation costs. We help pay for, you know, for monthly care, tuition of those kids. And then when they leave one of our partner programs, we will continue tracking with them if they want us to. And we pay for tutoring for kids while they're in residential care. And then we also pay for tutoring for them when they go home, when they go back to high school, or when they're in college. We look to not enable, but to come alongside on the journey of the kids that we work with and say, well, you know, what's a need now? So, you know, one time my boss and I, we brought one of our girls a bike that we bought and refurbished. She needed transportation getting back and forth to her job. And so, you know, we had lunch with her and we brought the bike with us, and she was real happy to get that. And that helped her, you know, reach her goals, her employment goals, to have reliable, you know, transportation. And she loved riding her bike, and it was a commute that she could do. We've helped for the same kind of reason we've helped kids, you know, to get cars to make it to their place of employment.
I love that because, as you mentioned, some children might not have the support of their parents or families. So financially, to get ahead, you know, when you get that assistance, family is really, you know, the ones who provide that in the beginning of your life, right? A car, or I mean, it could be even later in life. You know, family is such a big support system. And if a child doesn't have that, it's really easy for them to fall back into trafficking just because they're trying to make, they're like, well, I know how to do this. Let me make this extra money. And then they, you know, that comparison with the money, how much they make per hour at, you know, working the typical teenage job versus what they were used to making. At least for adults, I hear it's very challenging. as a survivor, just because they're used to, like what you said, like, you know, some of them are used to a certain lifestyle that they think they're living, you know, but there's so much, as you said, it's very complex trauma. Because I think for most people, they assume nobody would think about going back, you know, to the life, like to prostitution. And unfortunately, you know, human nature, I think, falls back sometimes on old lifestyle changes, you know, so change is hard.
It is hard. You know, a lot of it is survival sex. You know, if kids are homeless and on the street, it can be that. You know, sometimes the kids who are the worst treated, if they were, you know, with someone who used a lot of violence and, you know, kidnapping or, you know, locked in a room, that type of thing, can almost be easier sometimes for them to break away because, you know, that perpetrator is viewed as an enemy. You know, versus someone who woos them and maybe gives them some of the money back that they're making, doesn't keep it all, or, you know, you think of, you know, like the battered wife syndrome. And we now know, you know, people used to be so judgmental, you know, oh, she could just leave him. Why doesn't she leave him? Why would she stay and put up with that? You know, and you have a woman who ends up in the hospital over and over.
Well, right now I work in the hospital, in my day job. And, one of the nurses, they were talking about one of the, clients and the patients. And she literally said what you just said. And it was this week. And she said, I don't get it. Why don't you just leave? And, and so we started talking about how it takes about like six times, you know, or 6 to 8 times for them to like so many attempts to try to leave that situation.
Try to leave, and the trauma bond and the, you know, the manipulation and thinking it's your fault. Oh, I shouldn't have, you know, burned his dinner, or, you know, the tapes that are, you know, that play through people's heads. So when we know how difficult it is for adult women, often highly educated professional women, to extricate themselves from those kind of relationships, and then you think of a child and how much easier it is to control and manipulate a child, you know? So it can be very difficult to break away. And then for a lot of these kids, you know, they feel like this is their boyfriend. They've been told that he's their boyfriend. And so there's often a mixture of slapping around and violence, and then, oh, honey, I'm sorry, let me take you for dinner, you know, I'm going to buy you a new dress, and, you know, treat them like a princess for a little while, and, you know, lie. So sometimes you can have a perpetrator who will have two or three girls, and he'll play them off each other and tell each one that they're the favorite, or, I'm going to marry you, you know, you're not going to have to keep doing this for a very long time, just, you know, just to help us get ahead. All these little mind games and manipulation. And then, sadly, you know, you have now the phenomenon of self-trafficking just growing by leaps and bounds. You know, we had OnlyFans, you know, hit the scene and became this huge phenomenon. And you've got actresses and models and celebrities and influencers on OnlyFans, you know, which just exploded during COVID. And that gets all this publicity and all these great stories, you know, in the regular mainstream media. Oh, you know, so-and-so, you know, she's making six figures doing OnlyFans, and there's no pimp involved. You can skip the middleman. It's put out there as, you know, a female empowerment, as feminism, you know, taking charge of your own sexuality and just doing what you want to do, as much or as little as you want to do. You can just put pictures of yourself up in your bathing suit, or you can do, you know, live sex acts on your account. But again, it's completely up to you. So it's, you know, that normalized all of this, you know, we just have sexuality shoved down our throats from every angle nowadays, and it's confusing for adults, and how much more so for our kids. And so you have teen girls who are seeing this happening and seeing the amount of money that they're told can be made. And so you do have a phenomenon now of you've got all the, you know, you have girls being put out on the street, women being put out on the street, boys, you know, that's all still happening, and pimp relationships and coercion. And then you have, you know, this self-trafficking, this viewing it completely differently. Like, I'm doing this by choice. You know, I'm a sex worker. I'm empowered. You know, this is my way to make money. And
then the culture has really shifted when it comes to what we view as wholesome. Like, we don't even, you know, for most part, we don't even celebrate wholesomeness anymore. It's like seen as like weird and, oh, you're so unadventurous.
Exactly. So the cultural sea that our kids are swimming in, it is a very confusing time to grow up. And, you know, the messaging that's out there all the time. And so how much more important for the churches to be tackling these kinds of things and, you know, having seminars and classes and in our youth groups, you know, sharing about this stuff in a proactive way.
Yes.
From a Christian perspective and being in on the prevention side, you know, mm-hmm. so that they don't end up needing to, you know, to be a client of one of our programs. And so that's all really necessary. And I'd say that, you know, a good thing is we met at the JUST Conference in Washington, D.C., which is a national child trafficking symposium that happens every year by Shared Hope. And there are a lot of great people and organizations now that are stepping up to the plate and trying to fight against this, you know, phenomenon and stem the tide. And most of them are faith-based. Most of them are Christian. And so the church is doing what we're supposed to do, you know, being salt and light in our world. And, you know, there never should have been this false dichotomy between, oh, they're a social justice church, a social gospel church, and we're a Bible-believing, you know, faith-based, we preach salvation, we teach the Bible. Well, the two always should have been hand in hand. You know, there never should have been a division like that. God, we're to save souls, and we're to preach the gospel unapologetically, but we're also supposed to, you know, feed the poor and clothe people and be caring for the widow and orphan and, you know, binding up the broken places in our cities and our culture, wherever God has planted us. He wants us to be out and about in our communities and making people feel welcome and putting out the message that we're not just for perfect looking people to come to our church. Mm-hmm. You know, Jesus is for everybody. Everybody matters. Mm-hmm. So I am very thankful that the church is leading the way in fighting human trafficking and child sex trafficking in particular. And a lot more, there's a lot more for us to do. We're just scratching the surface. There need to be many, many, many more programs caring for victims than are available. Lots more to do, both here in the United States and overseas. It's all important.
Thank you so much for tuning in to this week here on the Galvanize and Restore podcast. You have been listening to Kathy Wilson from New Day for Children, an amazing organization working here in the United States to facilitate the restorative care of children who have been adversely affected by modern day slavery, also known as human trafficking. If you are interested in perhaps mentoring a child during their process of healing and helping them with schoolwork, A New Day for Children has openings for this. There are some paid positions, and you do have to meet certain qualifications. So please get in contact with A New Day for Children if you would like to hear more. And that website is newdayforchildren.com. Thank you again for listening. Please share this episode with someone if you believe it was helpful for you. Also, don't forget to leave a positive review wherever you are listening. It helps for others to find this podcast as well. Connect with me also over at the Instagram at Gal Restore, which is GalReStore. Hope you enjoyed this episode and see you later.